file 2?
I do not know how long I gazed at this sight from the lonely turret window, before I dropped suddenly into a dreamless swoon, out of which the high sun of morning aroused me. My first impulse on waking was to communicate all my fears and observations to Dennis Barry. But as I saw the sunlight glowing through the latticed east window, I became sure that there was no reality in what I thought I had seen. I am given to strange phantasms, yet I am never weak enough to believe in them. So, on this occasion, contented myself with questioning the labourers, who slept very late and recalled nothing of the previous night, save misty dreams of shrill sounds. This matter of the spectral piping harassed me greatly, and I wondered if the crickets of autumn had come before their time to vex the night and haunt the visions of men. Later in the day, I watched Barry in the library, poring over his plans for the great work, which was to begin on the morrow, and for the first time felt a touch of the same kind of fear that had driven the peasants away. For some unknown reason, I dreaded the thought of disturbing the ancient bog and its sunless secrets, and pictured terrible sights lying black under the unmeasured depth of age-old peat. That these secrets should be brought to light seemed injudicious, and I began to wish for an excuse to leave the castle and the village. I went so far as to talk casually to Barry on the subject, but did not dare continue after he gave his resounding laugh. So I was silent when the sun set fulgently over the far hills, and Kilderry blazed all red and gold in a flame that seemed a portent. Whether the events of that night were reality or illusion, I shall never ascertain. Certainly they transcend anything we dream of in nature and the universe. Yet in no normal fashion can I explain those disappearances which were known to all men after it was over. I retired early and full of dread, and for a long time could not sleep in the uncanny silence of the tower. It was very dark, for although the sky was clear, the moon was now well on the wane, and would not rise till the small hours. I thought, as I lay there, of Dennis Barry, and of what would befall that bog when the day came, and found myself almost frantic with an impulse to rush out into the night, take Barry's car, and drive madly to Ballyloch, out of the menaced lands. But before my fears could crystallize into action, I had fallen asleep, and gazed in dreams upon the city in the valley, cold and dead under a shroud of hideous shadow. Probably it was the shrill piping that awaked me, yet that piping was not what I noticed first when I opened my eyes. I was lying with my back to the east window overlooking the bog, where the waning moon would rise, and therefore expected to see light cast on the opposite wall before me. But I had not looked for such a sight as now appeared. Light, indeed, glowed on the panels ahead, but it was not any light that the moon gives. Terrible and piercing was the shaft of ruddy refulgence that streamed through the Gothic window, and the whole chamber was brilliant with a splendour intense and unearthly. My immediate actions were peculiar for such a situation, but it is only in tales that a man does the dramatic and foreseen thing. Instead of looking out across the bog, towards the source of the new light, I kept my eyes from the window in panic and fear, and clumsily drew on my clothing with some dazed idea of escape. I remember seizing my revolver and hat, but before it was over I had lost them both, without firing the one or donning the other. After a time, the fascination of the red radiance overcame my fright, and I crept to the east window and looked out whilst the maddening, incessant piping whined and reverberated through the castle and all over the village. Over the bog was a deluge of flaring light, scarlet and sinister, and pouring from the strange olden ruin on the far islet. The aspect of that ruin I cannot describe. I must have been mad, for it seemed to rise, majestic and undecayed, splendid and column-cinctured, the flame-reflecting marble of its entablature piercing the sky like the apex of a temple on a mountain top. Flutes shrieked and drums began to beat, and as I watched in awe and terror, I thought I saw dark, saltant forms silhouetted grotesquely against the vision of marble and effulgence. The effect was titanic, altogether unthinkable, and I might have stared indefinitely had not the sound of the piping seemed to grow stronger at my left. Trembling with a terror oddly mixed with ecstasy, I crossed the circular room to the north window, from which I could see the village and the plain at the edge of the bog. There my eyes dilated again with a wild wonder as great as if I had not just turned from a scene beyond the pale of nature, for on the ghastly red-lit plain was moving a procession of beings in such a manner as none ever saw before, save in nightmares. Half-gliding, half-floating in the air, the white-clad bog-wraiths were slowly retreating towards the still waters and the island ruin, in fantastic formations suggesting some ancient and solemn ceremonial dance. Their waving, translucent arms, guided by the detestable piping of those unseen flutes, beckoned in uncanny rhythm of a throng of lurching labourers who followed dog-like with blind, brainless, floundering steps, as if dragged by a clumsy but resistless demon will. As the naiads neared the bog, without altering their course, a new line of stumbling stragglers zigzagged drunkenly out of the castle from some door far below my window, groped sightlessly across the courtyard and through the intervening bit of village, and joined the floundering column of labourers on the plain. Despite their distance below me, I at once knew they were the servants brought from the north, for I recognised the ugly and unwieldy form of the cook, whose very absurdness had now become unutterably tragic. The flutes piped horribly, and again I heard the beating of the drums from the direction of the island ruin. Then, silently and gracefully, the naiads reached the water and melted one by one into the ancient bog, while the line of followers, never checking their speed, splashed awkwardly after them and vanished amidst a tiny vortex of unwholesome bubbles, which I could barely see in the scarlet light. And as the last pathetic straggler, the fat cook, sank heavily out of sight in that sullen pool, the flutes and the drums grew silent, and the blinding red rays from the ruins snapped instantaneously out, leaving the village of doom lone and desolate in the wan beams of a new-risen moon. My condition was now one of indescribable chaos. Not knowing whether I was mad or sane, sleeping or waking, I was saved only by a merciful numbness. I believe I did ridiculous things, such as offering prayers to Artemis, Latona, Demeter, Persephone, and Pluton. All that I recalled of a classical youth came to my lips as the horrors of the situation roused my deepest superstitions. I felt I had witnessed the death of a whole village, and knew I was alone in the castle with Dennis Barry, whose boldness had brought down a doom. As I thought of him, new terrors convulsed me, and I fell to the floor, not fainting, but physically helpless. Then I felt the icy blast from the east window, where the moon had risen, and began to hear the shrieks in the castle far below. Soon these shrieks had attained a magnitude and quality which cannot be written of, and which make me faint as I think of them. All I can say is that they came from something I had known as a friend. At some time during this shocking period, the cold wind and the screaming must have roused me, for my next impression is of racing madly through inky rooms and corridors, and out across the courtyard into the hideous night. They found me at dawn, wandering mindless near Ballyloch. But what unhinged me utterly was not any of the horrors I had seen or heard before. What I muttered about it as I came slowly out of the shadows was a pair of fantastic incidents which occurred in my flight. Incidents of no significance, yet which haunt me unceasingly when I am alone in certain marshy places, or in the moonlight. As I fled from that accursed castle along the bog's edge, I heard a new sound, common, yet unlike any I had heard before at Kilderry. The stagnant waters, lately quite devoid of animal life, now teemed with a horde of enormous slimy frogs, which piped shrilly and incessantly in tones strangely out of keeping with their size. They glistened, bloated and green in the moonbeams, and seemed to gaze up at the fount of light. I followed the gaze of one very fat and ugly frog, and saw the second of the things which drove my senses away. Stretching directly from the strange olden ruin on the far islet to the waning moon, my eyes seemed to trace a beam of faint, quivering radiance, having no reflection in the waters of the bog. And upward, along that pallid path, my fevered fancy pictured a thin shadow slowly writhing, a vague, contorted shadow, struggling as if drawn by unseen demons. Crazed as I was, I saw in that awful shadow a monstrous resemblance, a nauseous, unbelievable caricature, a blasphemous effigy of him who had been Dennis Barry. The end.